We've all grown up hearing warnings from our parents like, don't sit too close to that TV, it'll hurt your eyes. And we've all heard that medical advice, whether we want it or not. Got a cold? Eat chicken soup. But is any of this stuff true? New York Times science writer Anahad O'Connor collected the answers to these and other questions in his new book, Never Shower in a Thunderstorm: Surprising Facts and Misleading Myths About Our Health and the World We Live In. Anahad O'Connor joins us from our bureau in New York City. Welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. Now, first, let's start with the title, Never Shower in a Thunderstorm. Should we heed this advice?
Well, this is something that I always heard growing up, and I always thought it was just my mother's way to get me out of the shower or get me off the phone. But the way it works is that actually every year about 20 people in the United States are shocked indoors while they're showering.
Wow, that's a lot.
Talking on the phone, yeah.
Are those people counted in the, the people who are hit by lightning?
Yeah, okay. There's actually a database that describes every incident in detail online that you can look up.
Because I've always heard that you're more likely to get hit by lightning than be in a plane crash, for example.
Yeah, that is true. And you're much less likely to get shocked indoors, but it does happen. And the way it works is that if you think about a building kind of acting like a metal cage, when it's struck by lightning, the electricity is kind of conducted around you through pipes and the wiring, and usually dissipates into the ground. But if you actually come into contact with, let's say, an appliance or you touch a faucet, that electricity can go through the pipes or through the wiring and jump to you.
Does that include the phone?
Yeah, it can go through phone wiring.
I mean, for those old people who have landline phones.
Yeah. it does happen.
Okay, how about health? Is watching TV, does that damage your eyes?
This is something that I would probably call an old technology tale, because years ago when the first TVs came out, they emitted levels of radiation that could theoretically be harmful. But the way TVs are designed today, you might get some eye strain, but that's about it.
If you have questions for Anahad O'Connor or myths that you heard growing up, you want him to Truth Squad. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Or send us an email at talk@npr.org. Anahad O'Connor, tell us about chicken soup. Is it really the elixir of health?
This is one that most people probably think is a myth, but several teams of scientists have actually studied chicken soup and found that there are certain chemicals in chicken soup that can help you beat a cold. One is cysteine, which is related to a chemical called acetylcysteine, which is actually a type of medicine that doctors use to help clear up mucus in the lungs. Mm. So this is, can do the same in the form of chicken soup.
I love doing radio about mucus. let me ask
very
you.
Very nice imagery.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. It's really it's serendipitous to have you on today, because I've been reading all of the big news about second children, of which I am one, and about how they are genuinely dumber than their first children counterparts, even though in your book you discount this claim.
What I say in the book is really that studies have shown that it's not really birth order. It's kind of the factors involved in it. So if you take a big family, for example, studies have shown that oftentimes, if it's a single parent family, then the children born later will have certain, will suffer certain side effects. That can be, less time spent with their parents.
Hmm.
Or, mothers who have lots of children tend to start very young. And so that means that they have younger parents, and that affects, their education and things like that. So this is more of a complicated answer. It's not really a yes or no. There are so many different variables involved.
Let's go to the phones. I know lots of people have lots of questions for you. Let's start with Lucy in Ketchum, Idaho. Go ahead with your question.
Hello?
Hi, go ahead.
Hi. Yes, my question is standing in front of the microwave harmful while it's functioning, while it's being in use?
Great question. I know that this is one of those things that the pregnancy police bugged me about when I was pregnant, and that is all the millions of things that you can't do unless you want to, go to Hades for harming your baby. So is standing in front of the microwave, is that terrible?
If you're standing in front of a microwave that's been that's relatively new in a recent design, then you're pretty safe, because they're built with very sturdy shielding. And, I mean, studies have looked at this and shown that there's really no risk.
And Veronica in San Antonio, she has a good one.
I come from a very Hispanic traditional family, and just about every old family I know says that if you take a shower and go out, especially on a chilly day, you will get sick automatically just because it's cold outside. Your head is wet.
Anahad?
This one, there are kind of several variables involved. The way it works is that studies have actually shown that people who are, you know, who are wet and who are cold, that can actually affect your immune system, and that can cause dormant colds to, or that can give rise to dormant colds. So it can have some effect. But generally the reason people catch more colds in the winter is because they spend more time indoors. So people think it's often because, you know, they're outside without proper clothing or just the cold weather. But usually it's because people spend a lot more time indoors during the winter, and that allows, you know, the proximity allows germs to jump more easily from one person to the next. So there are different variables involved with this, you know, catch a chill, catch a cold, old wives' tale.
Fascinating. Mary in Minneapolis, what's your question?
Oh, hi. I was wondering if cell phones cause cancer.
This is one that they've been looking at for many years now. And so far, there's pretty good evidence to suggest that they don't. And what they've done is they've looked at people who have used cell phones for many years and who have developed brain tumors, and they've compared them to people who haven't used cell phones and have brain tumors. And they, you know, really found that there's really no good correlation. You know, for example, they haven't shown that, you know, a brain tumor might correspond to the same side of your head that you hold the phone to. But then, on the other hand, cell phones really haven't been around that long. I mean, so there aren't any studies that are, you know, go back more than about 10 years.
Dun, dun, dun.
So, I mean, we don't know yet if using a cell phone every day for 40 years can affect you. But so far, the evidence suggests that right now, it's probably not that much of a risk.
I guess we're throwing caution to the wind.
Yeah.
We have a couple of emails here. One, this one is from Drew in, I think it says, Bemis Point, New York. Never touch a baby bird or its parents won't take care of it.
Oh, that one is not true.
Really?
Yeah, zoologists have actually looked at this and found that it's not true.
We're going to try and stump you now. Here's this from Ashley. Is it true that your heart skips a beat when you sneeze?
No, it does not. I've talked to cardiologists about this one. It's a popular one, but they say it's definitely not true.
I'm sorry, that was from Art. We need to give Art his due. And now let's go back to the phones. This is William in, let me pronounce this right, Nunk, Connecticut? Hello?
Yes, hi.
Go ahead.
This is William in Noank. I heard that you were going to address swimming after eating. I'm a retired physician. When I was 16, I was exercising vigorously in the water, got out, ate an enormous couple of sandwiches, got back in, had a stomach cramp, and within 3 seconds was unconscious, sinking like a lead ball to the bottom, and was rescued. Had I not been rescued, I would have been dead. And the Red Cross manual of about 30 years ago tells that if you suffer a stomach cramp, you will not be able to recover yourself as versus a leg cramp. And what happens is the demands of digestion shunt the blood to the stomach. It doesn't get enough blood, so it has pain just as a person having a heart attack has pain. And it causes the body to curl up, the lungs deflate, and you sink like a cannonball.
Anahad, is Dr. William on the right track here?
Hi.
Well, I talked to the Red Cross about this one, and, I mean, they say that generally it's not a huge risk factor. What they're really concerned about is alcohol. There have been a lot of studies, and there are a lot of statistics showing that people who consume alcohol and then get in the water have an increased risk of drowning. But so far, at least according to the Red Cross, they haven't attributed any cases of drowning to a full stomach. So, and I talked to some gastroenterologists who say that, you know, there could be, or there is a decrease of blood flow, you know, to other parts of the body once you, you know, after you eat, you know, a full meal because of digestion. But generally, you know, they say that if you do get a cramp I mean, usually a cramp isn't so debilitating that you can't get out of the water. I mean, it sounds like this might be an exception. Also, if you look at professional swimmers, Olympic swimmers, they eat meals before they get in the water to give them energy. So the conventional thinking is that it's not a huge risk unless your meal involves alcohol, but this sounds like a pretty astounding exception.
In your book, you write about another rumored aphrodisiac, oysters. Now, this is a tease here. We've posted an excerpt at our webpage where you talk more about that. So we're not really going to talk about that. You have to go to the website, npr.org/talk. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Anahad O'Connor, let's talk about some health-related myths, or maybe not myths here. There's a chapter on germs. Toilet seats, do they spread germs?
There actually are a couple diseases that can be transmitted by toilet seats, but generally toilet seats are not a good, you're not really at risk for catching many things from a toilet seat because of the cold environment. You know, germs don't really survive very well on porcelain and in that cold environment. But, I mean, there have been cases of people catching some bacterial diseases.
I've in fact heard that it's like the least germy place in the bathroom.
Yeah, in the bathroom, studies have shown pretty conclusively that the most germ-laden places are the faucets, of course, because people, you know, hit the toilet and then hit the sinks and touch the faucets. And then also the door handles. You definitely want to use tissue to open the door if you are, you know, kind of a germ freak because
Do you have to be a germ freak? You don't have to be a germ freak. America, wash your hands. This is a special report from Talk of the Nation. Let me ask you another one. Do antiperspirants cause cancer?
There is a chemical in some antiperspirants that have been linked to, you know, breast cancer, for example. Those chemicals are called parabens. But the NIH has been studying this for several decades and, you know, hasn't really found a very conclusive link.
Is this the same thing that are in those Nalgene water bottles that the crunchy people carry around all the time? The same paraben? Is that the same?
It may be.
Have I stumped you?
It may be.
Okay, we have another water bottle question. This one from Gwen in Wichita, Kansas. Go ahead.
Yes, I have a question. A couple of months ago, I received a mass mailing from a friend that stated that we should not drink water when it has been left in a vehicle because the gases from the bottle will emit into the water. That's not healthy for us. Is that true?
I'm sorry, because the gases will emit...
The fumes of the poisons from the bottle, the makeup structure, the properties of the bottle,
mm-hmm.
and it will release into the water.
Good question, Gwen.
There has been a lot of studies on this, and, I mean, you're really not at that much of a risk. I mean, what happens is that in order for, I mean, there have been a lot of emails on the web, saying that it's dangerous to drink from, you know, plastic bottles, especially if they've been or any plastic container, especially if they've been microwaved or put in the freezer. But the way it works is that there are certain chemicals in plastic containers called phthalates, and these are the chemicals that give the containers their flexibility. And they can get into the water, but it takes high temperature. I mean, you need a high temperature to get that chemical reaction started.
So Gwen is right. If you leave the bottle of water in the car, it can get really hot, and then you shouldn't drink it.
Well, I think if you just leave a bottle of water in a car, I mean, it depends on the temperature.
I see.
I don't think the temperature would get high enough, and I don't think the bottle would be in there long enough for there to be a chemical reaction taking place. But if you were to microwave a plastic container, for example, that's not designed for microwave use, then those phthalates will definitely get into the water, and you can definitely put yourself at risk. Over time.
Here's another water myth, or maybe not. A scientific study showing the need or benefit from drinking 6 to 8 glasses of water per day. This is what Gary in St. Louis wants to see. What do you think?
There's no truth to the, you know, claim that you need exactly 6 or exactly 8 glasses of water. You basically just need enough to stay hydrated. For some people, that's less. if you try to force feed yourself 6 or 8 glasses of water a day, you may just be doing yourself a disservice.
And a great one quick from Jim in Spencer, Iowa. Go ahead.
Yes, I was curious to know if there's any truth to the rumors that animals can detect the oncoming presence of an earthquake or tornado, some of those types of stories I'm sure you've heard.
Yeah, this was a popular one that came out, particularly after the big tsunami hit a few years ago. And, I mean, there's a lot of debate about this in the scientific community, and it's not quite clear. It seems like there may be some animals, you know, that can't, like birds, for example, you know, can see, you know, these natural disasters coming, you know, certain animals that are closer to the ground. But it hasn't been shown that animals have any kind of sixth sense for these types of disasters.
So just birds?
Well, it's still being debated and it's still being looked at scientifically. But, I mean, there is some evidence that some animals can probably see these things coming.
Okay. Anahad O'Connor, thank you for clearing these things up for us. Very important questions here. Anahad O'Connor is the author of the book Never Shower in a Thunderstorm, Surprising Facts and Misleading Myths About Our Health and the World We Live In. You can read an excerpt from the book at npr.org/talk. And come on, you really want to know about oysters and whether or not they're really an aphrodisiac. So we've put an excerpt of his book up on our webpage. It's npr.org/talk. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Neil Conan is back tomorrow. I'm Andrea Seabrook in Washington.